This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I'm Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Lee from the epicenter of the Hairnado, also known as spring shedding season. And you're listening to the ProEquineGrooms.com episode of Horses in the Morning. And today is March 28th, 2019. And we have wonderful, wonderful sponsors for this episode: Shapley Superior Equine Grooming Products, Ice Horse, Better by Miles, Hands-On Grooming Gloves. You absolutely need these gloves in your life. And the GreenGuard Equine Grazing Muzzle. Your horse will absolutely thank you for this muzzle. He's going to be able to breathe so much easier. Hello, everybody, and hello, Coach Jen.
Good morning.
It's Thursday.
Let's kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
Your presence is required on the command deck.
Greetings. Yay. We have offers from sponsors this week. Tell me.
We have three offers from the amazing sponsors. So Ice Horse has put together a kind of a laminitis information bundle that I will link to the show notes page, where you can go and download all of this amazing science and information about laminitis. And some of it we're going to talk to our guest about, Dr. Orsini, in a few minutes. Hands-On Grooming Gloves, literally the best grooming tool ever, that it will just change the way you groom your horse. They have a free shipping code to order on their website, hands-on gloves.com. You can use code PEG for free shipping, which saves you like $9 or something.
Wow.
Yeah, like $9. And then for the GreenGuard grazing muzzles, they have a March Madness special, because I guess they're also basketball fans. And you can get 15% off the muzzle from their Amazon and the GreenGuardEquine.com website with code GGSpring. And of course, I'm going to put all of this in the show notes, because that's a lot to remember.
That is a lot to remember. So yeah. When you go to horsesinthemorning.com, just go to the Pro Equine Grooms episodes. There's a little icon there. You just click on it and all the episodes pop up. And if you go to the March 2019 episode, all of these handy dandy offers will also be there. It's 15 GG spring for the, yes, Green Guard grazing muzzle. That is, yeah, awesome. Well, it's welcome fantastic. Back to the show. You're here the fourth Thursday of each and every month. And as you alluded to earlier, we will be chatting with Dr. James Orsini, and he's going to fill us in on the important things you need to know about laminitis, and hopefully some helpful hints on how you can keep your horse from getting it, because there's lots of horses that are at risk.
True. Up.
And then our Equiscience segment is also laminitis related. And it is
mind-blowing laminitis related. Not in terms of like tragedy, but just awareness about how much laminitis there is. It truly caught me by surprise. So I thought I'd share it with everybody.
There we go. And of course, there's going to be a fitness segment so that us humans don't get founder either.
Yes, it's true. And we're going to talk about being a weekend warrior and what that means for your horse, who may or may not be a weekend warrior.
There we go. And yep, of course, there's going to be some tips and listener questions, and they're going to have a lot to do with, hello, laminitis, fat ponies, and shedding.
Oh, we're going to talk all about the shedding. And, you know, over the years, I've come up with like this amazing system for how to help my horse shed his hair, and also how to groom him before I ride, so that as I ride, it's not blowing up into my chapstick and whatnot. So we're going to talk about shedding tips, different products that you can use to make life easier for you. And then honestly, what you can do if your horse decides to get really splotchy looking, like if he's not shedding evenly, and it can happen. And we'll talk a little bit more about the grazing muzzles, because it's such a critical time of the year. You really need to stay ahead of the whole laminitis risk. And we'll talk about fitting the grazing muzzle and things you need to look out for.
There we go. All great, fun information. So let's get right to things. We're going to have our first guest, Dr. James Orsini.
Yes, he is from the New Bolton Center, which is the University of Pennsylvania. And it's an amazing facility if you ever have the chance to even just drive by it. And the research and the science and the horse care that comes out of the New Bolton Center is cutting edge. And it's just, it's so helpful. And they're a very accessible veterinary center. They have a great Twitter feed with all sorts of amazing information. And we're really kind of honored to have Dr. Orsini join us today. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Orsini. I'm just going to pepper you with hopefully some very enlightening questions and answers about laminitis today. And I just want to start with something that I think a lot of horse owners wonder about, and that are, what are the real, like, main categories of causation for laminitis? What do we need to be looking for in terms of risk factors?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, and certainly one that we try to sort of pigeonhole or break down into three or four categories. Certainly the one that is most common is related to some severe illness. In other words, colic, for instance, is one of the common ones that's used as a risk factor, especially if colic is associated with diarrhea, has some sort of colitis, inflammation of the large intestine, that seems to predispose these horses for laminitis. So that's one. So some inflammatory disease, some infection, some major thing involving the abdomen, colic, the chest, some sort of pneumonia, and the reproductive tract, such as a retained placenta after foaling. So that's category one. Category two is the one that we see, and we've gotten, I think, a much better understanding of this type of laminitis, and that's seen in the older horse, the horse that's, say, greater than 10 years of age. And as they become less active physically, yet they are still getting fed their normal grain ratio ration, and they're out on the pasture eating lots of grass, that they can develop a disease called equine metabolic syndrome. And this is really very similar to what we see in people with type 2 diabetes. And this is those that, as they age or become less active, they put on weight or they end up having weight or fat in their abdomen that actually does result in what's called insulin resistance. And these are all things that we know are associated with it. So equine metabolic syndrome is one that is kind of insidious. You don't really recognize it until it actually finally occurs. And so it may take weeks to months. And so one of the most important things with that disease is that you really monitor, one, your horse's weight, because we see it more likely in the overweight horse than the underweight horse, although there are those horses that are slender, at least appearing that way outwardly, yet they have enough fat in their abdomen that seems to be a reservoir for this disease, where you end up getting these mediators that result in the inability, or the cell's inability to respond to insulin. So they end up having high insulin. So that's the second large category. The third large category is what we see in orthopedics, and that's when we have a very severe injury to one leg, a fracture, for instance, that's repaired. And then they, in the process of healing, just because the fracture's healed doesn't mean that they're 100% on the repaired leg, is that they overweight the other leg. So it's called contralateral or support limb laminitis. Right. And this, again, is one that can be insidious in the sense that it may take weeks. The average is somewhere around 3 weeks from the time of surgery until you actually see the signs of laminitis in the opposite limb, but it's usually fairly severe and fairly abrupt when it occurs, and many times life-threatening. And so we know that's another category of horses that we watch very carefully post-surgery and try to, one, do a couple of things. One is support the opposite leg as well as the injured leg to make sure. And it's more common, again, to see it in the forelimbs just because of the weight distribution being, you know, 60% of the body weight is borne by the front limbs versus the hind limbs. So just from the mechanics of it, you can see why the front legs or the front feet are more likely to be at risk. And then the fourth category, which is less clear, but we clearly see it, is what we call the repetitive injury. In other words, the carriage horse that's out in working on hard asphalt. It's a repetitive injury or concussion to the foot, and that over time creates inflammation in the foot and founder. But of the four categories, this is one that is certainly the least common to see, but something that certainly needs to be looked for, especially in those horses that are used as carriage horses and used as basically for work for right. We see it very common in the Amish communities here that use these horses as their means of transportation. So that sort of puts it into the four categories as the risk groups.
Okay. That's really, really nice to kind of almost categorize your own horse depending on what their job is and what especially their waistline is and, you know, a history of lameness and their colic risks. It's truly amazing to me that you have one particular condition of the hooves with so many different roads leading to it. And because of that, does that mean that there are lots of different signs and symptoms of laminitis depending on the cause, or are there kind of a universal basket of things that a horse owner needs to pay attention to? And how do we know that something could be wrong in the hoof?
Yeah, I think that that's an excellent question in that it really does. I think it's the old saying, you know, all roads lead to Rome, you know. And right. So basically, even though there are multiple risk factors, that the ultimate path is failure of the attachment of the hoof wall to the third phalanx. And that's where the laminar tissue plays its role as the bond that actually holds that together. And so we know that there are a number of different potential causes or within that different paths that occur. For instance, we know in the horse with colic that has diarrhea, colitis, or pneumonia, or retained placenta, that there are these inflammatory mediators. And this is not uncommon in any inflammatory disease, but as we become and the ability to measure these mediators, we have a better understanding of what are some of these, we call trigger factors, these factors right. that when they actually shower the foot, that they create enough inflammation, and with the inflammation, the bond, the basement membrane that actually holds the sensitive and insensitive lamina together. I mean, that's a really the two types. And the sensitive is the type that is called the dermal, just for technical purposes. Mm-hmm. And the insensitive is called the epidermal. So you'll hear those terms used interchangeably. And those are really, and it's sort of like your fingers on both hands, and you put them together. And that's sort of the bond that you'll see in your mind's eye relative to how the laminar tissue actually works together with the sensitive and insensitive lamina. And when that bond breaks, then your hands come apart as the lamina do. And that's why the coffin bone, third phalanx, and we'll the hoof wall separate. Yeah. And that either results in rotation, which you'll see on a radiograph, or actually if it's severe enough, and if some of these very severe infections or inflammations of the colon, the diarrhea, you actually get sinking, where actually the foot just loses all its support. Oy. And the foot just drops. Right. So that's one group, and we know that that's inflammatory. We also think in the equine metabolic syndrome that there is some inflammatory component to it as well, and it's also related to the fact that glucose, which is really the engine that drives the metabolism of the foot, is also poorly managed. And so what happens is that the bond again, the normal metabolic mechanisms are disrupted. And so over time, that also results in slow degeneration or separation of that laminar tissue. Mm-hmm. So that has some inflammation to it, but also has a lot to do with the utilization of glucose as the engine that supports the health of the laminar tissue.
Okay.
When we get to the third one, Liv, on the support limb, we had a suspicion that it was probably more related to blood supply to the foot.
Okay.
And we are much clearer on that belief that in fact is what happens, is that if you watch a horse normally, they shift their weight fairly regularly, and it's just a short change in weight bearing on their hoof. And what that does is it allows us two things. One, it allows some of the pressure from the horse standing on it to be relieved, but also the changing and shifting their weight actually provides a pumping mechanism so that the blood in the foot, the venous blood, the blood that's gone through and is now going back to the lungs for more oxygen, doesn't get pumped. Normally, it's pumped out of the foot and then up the leg and back to the heart. But in a horse that has support limb laminitis, you'll see that they are preferentially weight bearing on the normal foot because it's so painful to switch weight on to the injured leg. And so what happens is you get, again, a stagnation of blood in mm-hmm. the foot, and then results again in a cascade of events that result in failure of the lamellar tissue.
Wow.
And then the fourth one, probably it's more of a chronic low-grade inflammation in the road founder, as it's called, the fourth
right.
category. And that's more probably a low-grade inflammatory process that results in failure over time.
So, wow. It is
a lot of stuff. Huh?
It is a lot of stuff, but I think it's important to understand the process so that you can become more aware about what kind of footing your horse is ridden on, and
yep.
you know, how often are you having to go one billet hole bigger because he's gained weight, things like
right.
that.
Right.
So just say the average horse owner, like me, for example, I go to the barn about 6 days a week. I work a full day. I go to the barn. I really want to just chill out and hang with my horse and go for a nice ride. But I need to be noticing things to make sure that his overall health and especially his hoof health is good. So what things do horse owners need to look for in terms of avoiding laminitis?
Yeah, I think there's a number of things. And one is just having a high index of suspicion. I mean, especially, for instance, if, you know, you're chilling out with your horse, but you're not riding him as often. I mean, but you're feeding him the same amount of food as far as the ration goes. So you need to be thinking consciously about what they're doing relative
right.
to what they're eating. So just thinking about their nutrition all the time. And certainly, I always think that there is a triad. There's the veterinarian, there's the farrier, and then mm-hmm. there's the owner. And
right.
if there's a trainer and rider involved, they're also part of that group. But certainly, owner, veterinarian, and farrier should be working together. And so your farrier is the one looking at these feet all the time. And, you know, they are certainly a good resource as well. To if they start to see a widening of the white line, for instance, or they see some other pathology, some other problems of the foot that needs to be attended to, I think that both with the veterinarian who may need radiographs
mm-hmm.
to help to sort out some of this. So I think a lot of it is really prevention, and I think certainly, you know, clearly in a horse that has colic and is severely ill or ill for a period of time, that we know that those horses are at risk. And so there are preventive mm-hmm. things that you could be doing as part of that. And as we said, for the metabolic, that's a lot of if you're reducing your amount of activity, not training as much or not riding as often, or you're riding on the weekends, then right. maybe during the week you want to modify what they're eating so that they're not putting on extra pounds that you don't notice until it becomes fairly obvious. And then on the weekends, and they are working harder then you can certainly adjust their feed accordingly. But again, it's important not to make drastic changes, you know, and so everything should be done incrementally. And you could, you know, you can use some of the weight tapes as part of your routine monthly or quarterly herd health or animal health, just as a way of trying to monitor that also. But certainly when you have your veterinarian and your farrier there, you know, your veterinarian's there maybe for routine stuff once or twice a year, that they're a good resource as well, as well as your farrier who's there every 4 to 6 weeks.
Right.
You know, even if you're just trimming the feet, they can certainly be a good person to objectively look at it. Because I think sometimes we get blinded because we're there all the time and we don't see the subtle changes
right.
that are occurring versus yeah. someone else that's there.
I personally am strangely meticulous, or I don't know, it's probably strange, but I check my horse's digital pulses every single day because he has a history of insulin resistance and things are starting to get green where I live and the muzzle's been busted out. But it's amazing to me how a horse can look and act and be ridden completely normally and have like a screaming, bounding pulse in one hoof, which, you know, obviously I've seen that a couple of occasions and it turns out that horse has had an abscess. But I've just kind of put that into my grooming routine to feel the hooves. Are they hot? Is my horse having trouble turning in his stall? Is he acting like he's standing on eggshells? Like he doesn't want to maybe go from the soft squishy shavings onto the hard concrete, things like that.
Sure.
But I do also think it's really important when my farrier visits, I will have him kind of go over what my horseshoe has been hiding. Like we look at the white line and we look at, you know, any cracks and things like that. Really, really, it's fascinating. So my next question has to do with, you're a horse owner or you're taking care of your friend's horse because they're on a beautiful, wonderful vacation and you just have this gut feeling that something's wrong in the hooves. What are the top three or four things we need to do if we suspect there's a hoof problem?
I think two things. One is clearly if you feel uncomfortable with your assessment and clearly you recognize a problem, then I think your veterinarian is your first resource and the one that is going to be able to give you good medical advice. And again, I always think that the partnership between a veterinarian and a farrier is critical and that they should be working as a team rather than individuals that are coming there and giving independent advice without actually kind of communicating between them. Because I think shared observations, both by you as the owner or the caretaker and the veterinarian and the farrier, is really critical. And so certainly if you're away and for your peace of mind, I think one of the things that, you know, we have at our meetings have tried to establish is that we actually have a poster that we have given out just because as sort of things to be thinking about relative to the laminitis horse
right.
at risk, but also who to call. And so that information should be someplace where a caretaker knows they can find it, all right?
Right.
And not have to scramble so that it's sort of like leaving your kids with a babysitter. You know, you give them a list of things that they can eat, they can't eat. If there's a problem,
right.
emergency, what to do. Same thing for your horse.
Okay.
I think that's always, always prudent and makes just good sense in planning. And I think you're probably sound like you're very good at this and you clearly are always thinking ahead and not waiting for the crisis to occur, but actually thinking down the road as to what are some potential problems.
Yeah. So that was one thing that a horse owner needs to do, obviously loop in their team. What are two or three other things if there's a suspected hoof problem going on?
Sure. If for instance, if the horse is, your horse is clearly not well and has, increased heat in the feet, one of the simplest things you can do is cool the foot. And there are lots of different ways to do it. We've looked at a number of different mechanisms to cool the foot. Because one of the things you want it to be is you want it to be simple.
Right.
You want it to be effective, and you want it to have some duration. In other words, so you're not doing it every hour or so. So, you know, there are some good systems. One of the ones that we've looked at is a system manufactured by Ice Horse, where they actually have a boot and they actually have these ice packs that mm-hmm. fit into the boot, and they're designed, and they've been really quite good in that they've actually worked with us in trying to design the boot and the ice pack so that they actually have the greatest contact with the hoof, as well as the pastern and fetlock. Because one of the things we know that's important, besides cooling the foot, you also want to cool the blood supply to the foot as well. And so when you feel those digital pulses bounding,
right.
you know that the blood pressure is clearly elevated, and this is certainly not uncommon in an inflammatory condition where the hoof is actually overheated or warmer than normal. And mm-hmm. and we know that cold therapy, cryotherapy is the medical term for it, but it just cold therapy is what it is a way of actually protecting the foot. And it actually, what it does is it, I always say, it's sort of like putting the foot into a state of hibernation. In other words, where the demand for glucose is reduced so that the cells that are inflamed or being bombarded by these inflammatory mediators are actually able to survive at a lower oxygen and lower glucose concentration. But also the cold also is a very effective anti-inflammatory. In other words, it really does dampen the inflammatory response so that the hoof then is less hot, all right, number one, but two, is less likely then to fail. So cold therapy is
okay.
one of the simplest things we can do. And if you don't have, you know, a system like Ice Horse, which is basically a simple boot with ice packs, which is very easy to apply, certainly using ice itself in some sort of a plastic bag and wrapped around the foot and pastern is something also that can be done. And ideally, you'd like to do all 4 feet, but if you don't have the wherewithal as far as a system in place, certainly the front feet are the ones that are preferentially cooled,
okay.
Just because of their, as I said, just because there's a mechanical weight bearing in that the front feet are using or holding more of the horse's weight than the hind feet. And so
Got
with
it.
That combination, they're also at greater risk.
So I kind of know the answer to this, but I'm curious to share this information with everybody. But if you have a horse that your vet's come out, has confirmed a likely diagnosis of laminitis, how long should that horse be standing in ice continuously?
The rule of thumb is that you should continue icing the feet ideally for at least 24 hours beyond clinical signs. So, for instance, if they have diarrhea mm-hmm. and they're being treated and managed at the farm, that once the diarrhea resolves, that if you go 24 hours beyond that should provide enough protection to the feet where they'll be beyond the at-risk period. All right, because there's several phases of laminitis, and the one that we know that cold therapy is most effective is if we actually use the cold therapy during what's called the developmental phase. And this is the phase of the disease that you and I don't see clinical signs. And it's not until they get into the acute phase that actually clinical signs show. So if you have a horse that's at risk, but at this point is showing no signs of laminitis by camped out appearance or
mm-hmm.
constantly shifting their weight or increased digital pulses, increased heat, all the things that we know are some of the more common signs to look for. We know that by chilling their feet during this developmental phase, that you have the best protection. even in the early acute phase, we do believe that what it does is that it probably stops the progression of the disease.
Okay.
And so even though the horse may show signs of laminitis, it doesn't mean you shouldn't administer some sort of cold therapy.
Okay.
Because it also has some therapeutic effect, reduces inflammation, but also some protective effect in that it actually it helps to preserve those cells that are working overtime and require more glucose than what they're doing now and oxygen. What they're doing is you're putting them into a phase where the demands for their survival are less stringent, in other words, and they can survive in a lower glucose transport or lower oxygen transport into the cell.
Wow. So much amazing things to learn about just a seemingly simple process that clearly is not very simple at all. Are you working on anything in particular right now in terms of researching laminitis, or is there an interesting study that you have been a part of that you want to share?
Well, I think my goal right now is two things. One is to continually look at risk factors so that we're better able to identify the horse at risk during this developmental phase of the disease. And two is developing a system of chilling the foot so that it's, as I said, easy, because we know that if it's not simple, it's not more than a two-step process, maybe three steps, but two steps in particular, that it's likely not to get done or get done well. So
right.
My goal is to try to find the best ways of chilling the foot. And working with my colleagues here, we're also trying to decide, you know, what the hoof wall temperature needs to be in order to protect the lamina, which is several layers deeper in the foot. And so one of the things we know is that generally if the hoof wall temperature is at 10 degrees centigrade, that is usually considered to be a protective level. And so I'd love to be able to, better understand exactly what that translates into temperatures at the tissue level, at the lamellar tissue level. So,
right.
So my research is several pronged. One is to identify those horses or other risk factors. And wouldn't it be nice to have a simple blood test that we could run that would say this horse here, A, is at risk versus the one in the stall next to him, B, is not.
And
make it so it's objective. And two is a simple system that can be applied easily, but also has a longevity. In other words, instead of having to do this every 2 hours, wouldn't it be nice if we only had to change the ice packs every 6 or 8 hours?
It would be fantastic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because we know that if it's not fairly convenient, it's not going to get done either. And so maintaining that temperature at the target temperature, and as I mentioned, 10 degrees centigrade, and knowing that say for ice packs that are applied there will last 6 or 8 hours in a temperature of 70 degrees Fahrenheit, wouldn't that be terrific? You know, so that the horse owner doesn't have to think about all the other minutiae, but can actually focus on just doing what needs to be done to protect that particular horse and his feet and her feet.
Wonderful. Amazing things on the horizon, I hope. Anything else that you want to share?
I think one of the things that, I'm encouraged by is that in one respect, and I'm usually an optimistic guy, is that I think we've made tremendous progress. And I think now, as we become smarter in our understanding of a very complex disease, that we will be able to target our therapies more specifically to the horse in general, but to individuals in particular. And so really, it will be individual medicine rather than a herd medicine, so that for any particular individual horse, that we'll be able to develop a treatment regimen that's specific for that particular horse at that time, point in time.
Wonderful. Well, if you can just promise us that when you come up with these amazing things, you'll let us know.
Well, we have a team working here, and certainly we have lots of colleagues around the country and in the world that are as committed as we are here at Penn in trying to conquer laminitis, and we're going to continue to work toward that goal.
Wonderful. Thank you. I can't thank you enough for not only the amazing information, but your gift of time and sharing that with us. And how can people follow the New Bolton Center? I know you have a very nice Twitter feed. Is that something that is updated with all the latest news and whatnot?
Usually it is.
Yeah, okay.
And I think, you know, there's so much interest in the disease itself that there's lots that's coming out in many of the journals that horse owners, trainers, and riders read as well. So I can assure you that anything that is cutting edge and really exciting, that there'll be information out there, either here locally at Penn at New Bolton Center, or clearly in some sort of a news feed of some sort.
Mm-hmm. And if I know some of the listeners are kind of new to me, but they will shortly learn that I like to read those types of dry medical things. So I'll pass on all the information.
That's great.
Thank you terrific. Again. It's been wonderful.
It's been my pleasure.
Jen, I'm so excited. I'm so excited about the fitness segment.
how can anybody, when you say fitness, I get, tell me you're going to give me something that's going to enliven and enlighten and like get me excited about being more fit.
Yes, and also maybe no. We'll see. Because this is why this is such an interesting study to me, because this is actually a human study, but it has some implications in the horse world as well, because horses get sore like we do. Horses get injured just like we do. A horse that has a suspensory injury is very similar to a human that has an Achilles tendon injury. Things can happen. So I stumbled across this study for our fitness section, and it talks about weekend warriors and humans being weekend warriors. And the caveat of this study is that even if you're a weekend warrior and you only exercise 1 or 2 days a week, you can still have the overall health benefits of somebody who exercises more than twice a week, in that you have a lower risk of cancer, your heart's health starts to improve. All of the good things that we know are associated with working out, you can still get those if you are a weekend warrior.
We can cheat the system, tell me.
Yes, you can cheat the system, but there is a greater risk. So here's the thing. Weekend warriors are more likely to get injured. They have a higher risk for sprains, shin splints. Ever had shin splints? They totally are not fun at all. Rotator cuff injuries, that makes grooming your horse super difficult. Knee pain, all sorts of stuff. Tendon injuries, soft tissue injuries, muscle soreness. Those things can happen at a greater frequency if you are just a weekend warrior. So health benefits, yes. Risks, not so good news. So the other thing about being a weekend warrior is you don't get to experience the post-exercise high like non-weekend warriors do. And I find that when I'm exercising every day for several days in a row, like 5 days in a row, I get completely, there's something about me that just feels better. And they call that the day after boost. So the weekend warriors are missing out on the day after boost. So when we think of this in terms of the weekend warrior horse, we need to really be cognizant of, one, what we're asking our horses to do on the weekends. Are we doing gallop sets and like trail riding for 6 hours up really steep hills? Or are we doing like a leisurely, you know, walk, trek, canter around the farm where they have plenty of time to recover? The other thing about the weekend warrior horses, we do want to keep weight taping them to make sure that their waistline is not starting to exceed a healthy body score. Anyway, so that's fitness. So I don't know how you want to react to that, but it was just really interesting to me that you can benefit from exercise twice a week, but it carries a certain risk, right?
I think that's a very interesting study in that whether we are exercising ourselves or right. our horses, we always find ways to talk ourselves out of it. You know, we all talk amongst one another as horse people, motivating ourselves to go out and ride. Either in the winter, the weather is wretched. In the summer, the weather is hot.
Right.
At work, we have a lot of obligations and we have to work a lot or we're stressed out. All those things play against us.
They do.
And I'm sure sometimes we talk ourselves out of going out to ride because, well, I can only ride for a short period of time or I can only ride once in a while.
Right.
But even if you're only riding once in a while, both you and your horse can receive great benefits,
absolutely.
Especially when it's done, like this study says, wisely. You don't
absolutely
overdo it, and you're better off only pushing a little bit less often, I guess, to keep that risk of injury as low as you can, while at the same time maximizing the health benefits. So maybe do absolutely. A little extra longer warm up or take longer breaks. I have an hour to ride. I have to ride in my arena because that's where I ride. Well, warm up for 15 minutes, do some work for 15 minutes, and then take a 10 or 15 minute break and then do a little more work rather mm-hmm. than just working straight through. And
absolutely.
You might not sweat as much, but in the long term, you're likely to have a horse that's more fit and less likely to be sore, as are you. I like it.
Yeah, me too. And you know, for me, it's always been this kind of thing of, you know, my horse is older and I don't like to compete. So when I get on my horse, I kind of have to just say, I'm going to enjoy every step and I'm not going to put any expectations on every step. It has to be more about enjoying being with my horse instead of, I have a goal. I need to do canter sets today, or, you know, I need to jump 3'6" today. It's always just enjoy every single moment, because while I agree, we absolutely have these jobs that and lifestyles and commitments outside of the barn that can start to, you know, weigh us down a little bit. For me, I like to get talked out of working so I can go to the barn, not get talked out of going to the barn so I can work. But that's just me. Call me crazy.
Well, that's a very good outlook. And each person can work on the outlook that works for them. So
totally.
Someone who perhaps struggles with anything more than sitting on their horse and they feel like they're being left behind as far as their skill set or their advancement, maybe they will be the opposite of you and I, where you and I both work best if we try to avoid the agenda part.
Right.
Other people, right. That's what gets them to the barn, is creating that agenda.
Absolutely.
Even if the agenda is a weekend warrior style agenda. So there we go. What a great fitness tip.
Yep. It's really amazing what you can learn when you start to read all these, you know, science journals and weird things.
Now, are you going to put a link to that study on show notes page?
Yeah.
Awesome.
And the listeners might actually get a kick out of it, because I found it in Men's Health magazine.
There we go.
And I was like, okay, it's not technically a medical journal or a veterinary journal, but it's still science, right?
There we go. Science is yeah. science.
So, I want to go talk about, some of the things that Dr. Orsini touched on and my own personal experience. I've got a story to tell about laminitis and how I managed to basically kick it in the butt.
There we go.
So yeah, Dr. Orsini was talking about as easy, simple ways that you can use different products to create that cooling temperature to get the hoof to start to have inflammation relief and to start to change the metabolism within the hoof, and also to provide some just pain relief, because when the inflammation goes down, the pain level goes down. And a few years ago, I had a delightfully pain in the butt horse who basically had a low grade case of laminitis. And I knew, I was like, I have to get him in ice and I have to keep him there for at least a day, at least maybe even 2 days. So I had feed tubs, and I'm like, perfect. There was a 7-Eleven a half a mile down the road. I could go stock up on all the ice I wanted. I had all the feed tubs that I could possibly imagine, and I had the biggest, crankiest horse who would not stay in the tubs. Like, nothing was going to keep him in the tubs. He was going to be an upside-down spider crawling up the walls before he was going to stand in the tubs. So I said, fine, I'm going to get you the ice horse boots. And I got him the Laminitis boots, and I froze those packs. And the initial packs that I put on the very first time I used them, because his hoof was so hot from the Laminitis, those packs stayed cold about 2.5 hours. But because they took so much heat out of his hoof, when I put the next set of packs in, they were staying cold 4 to 5 hours. And because they're in a boot, he can't step out of them. So I was able to leave him in the stall. I didn't have to keep him cross-eyed. He just hung out in there. And pretty soon, 48 hours had passed, and he had zero rotation, zero sinking, zero movement, and he felt so much better. And I think it's really important that when you have such a challenging disease process that's so painful like laminitis, one, you have to try and catch it early, but two, you do have to find ways to get those really important treatments done and to have the tools to do it, to have this laminitis kit available and to be able to support your horse and not have to worry about it overnight. It was truly an amazing thing to go through, and now to learn even more of the science behind it and know that I did the right thing. So that's my story.
There you go. When in doubt, ice.
When in doubt, ice or oil. But that's about clipping. That's later.
Yeah, don't get those two mixed up. No oil for laminitis.
No.
Yes, ice for laminitis. Yes.
Yeah, when in doubt, oil your clippers, and when in doubt, ice the hooves.
It's, there you go. That's awesome.
And Ice Horse was really kind to sponsor this episode. Thank you for that. And they have put together an amazing laminitis information bundle that I hope everybody goes to download, because a lot of the things that Dr. Orsini and I talked about and more is included in this bundle. And it's just a nice reference to have. Because I know a lot of people listen to the podcast when they're driving down the road and maybe they want to remember something, but also stop signs and things like that. So the laminitis bundle will be in the show notes. And there we go.
Fun times. Phew. I think my brain is a little bit tired. So why don't we take a quick break for a little muzak from Templeton Thompson.
Cooped up, feeling all caged in. Need to get a little air so I can breathe again. Got a thirst in my heart, hunger in my eyes. Need to satisfy my soul, free my wild side. My wheels have been spinning like crazy in my head. Gotta get back to living before I forget. My sights are set where that green grass is, a good running start to get me over that fence. Yeah, 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 yeah. 'Cause I need somewhere to run, somewhere to ride. Fresh pair of wings and a long stretch of sky. I've saddled these dreams, I'm holding on tight. Need a good, strong, tall wind and a horse that can fly. Yeah. Got a load on my back and a lot on my mind. Yeah, the weight of this world really gets me sometimes. There's a freedom inside me I've been missing so much. Gonna kick the gates wide open and leave a big old cloud of dust. Yeah, 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 yeah. 'Cause I need somewhere to run, somewhere. first pair of wings and a long stretched sky. I've saddled these dreams, holding them tight. Need a good, strong, tall wind and a horse that can fly. Yeah. Giddy up, look at what lies on the horizon. Second star to the left, then straight on till morning. Cause I need somewhere to run, somewhere to ride. A fresh pair of wings and a long stretch of sky. Saddle these dreams, holding on tight. Need a good, strong, tall wind and a horse that can fly. Yeah, I need a horse that can fly. Feeling all cooped up, feeling all caged in. And a lot on my mind, yeah. Gonna free my wild side, yeah. I need a horse that can ride, yeah, yeah, yeah.
There you have it, Templeton Thompson, A Horse That Can Fly. You can find all of Templeton Thompson's music at templetonthompson.com.
You guys ready to talk about shedding?
Oh, gosh.
I know.
it's you dread the shed. Dread the shed. Yet it is so welcome because that means it's springtime.
I know. I actually don't dread the shed because it's so satisfying to me. It's instant gratification to just end up with like all of the little snow piles of gray hair around me. I truly appreciate the whole process of shedding. And I have lots and lots of tips about how it can be made a lot easier. But I first want to start with my shedding tips in that it's a really popular thing now to use like a metal shedding blade. Or one of those blocks that has like an old hacksaw blade in it.
Yes. I'm seeing a lot of ads for those right now. Yes.
Yeah. I just don't like them. I just don't like them. And here's why. One, there's places on my horse that shed that I don't want to put a piece of metal over. I don't want to put a piece of metal over my horse's hip bones or down my horse's legs or on his ears or his face. Like I just don't think metal needs to be there. The other thing is, as your horse is shedding his winter coat, the summer coat is actually coming in underneath it. So I also worry about, especially if you have a show horse, if you're using something metal on your horse, are you able to not damage that new coat coming in? Right?
Yes. I often wondered that, how particularly stiff, crunchy metal types of things, because the ubiquitous shedding blade has been around for a million years. Especially when you get down to the point where the coat is no longer grizzly bear-esque.
Right.
You know, when you got the grizzly bear thing going on, shedding blade, there's not a whole lot of summer hair coming in just yet. But you're right, especially as you get further and further along into the process, you do want to be careful that you're not damaging the summer coat, which, you said, is already hiding inside there. You don't see it, but it's in there.
So what do
you recommend? What is your top secret method for shedding out and not actually ingesting an entire horse's worth of hair?
Well, okay. So I have many tips for this. So one of the things I encourage people to do is to, if you have a sandy spot on your property, maybe there's a sand spot out by your compost bin or your round pen is sandy, or there's a sandy spot in one of the pastures that you're hoping will suddenly start to grow grass, but it's really just a pile of sand. Get your horse wet. If the temperature is appropriate, take him to the sand and let him roll. Let him do all the curry comfort. Like, I'm serious. Let him do the work.
That's interesting. Yeah, you're right. Because every time they roll, they stand up. You're like, oh, look, there's a horse print. Yeah.
There is a horse print. And then they shake and some of the sand comes out. So you will have to groom them afterwards, but they've done a lot of like that sort of curry comb action to themselves already. So you could do this, like if you're just going to get them wet and let them roll and then, you know, let them dry for a few minutes and then start to curry comb them, that's awesome. Or if you want to give them a bath, you can do that. I use the hands-on grooming gloves for all of my bathing and my curry combing. Like they're my go-to every single day. One, I'm super lazy, and I think that when you can curry your horse with two hands instead of one, it's just a smart thing to do, well, right?
You're going
to
cover the square inches a lot faster.
I am. The other thing is I can take him down his legs and his ears and his face, which he actually really likes, and they'll start to learn the sound of the Velcro. And so when Miguel hears the Velcro, he'll actually like, oh, wait. I know what's going to happen. I just put my hands out. I put them together and he just uses my hands to rub all over his face. And then he's like, okay, I'm done with that. And then he turns and I rub his shoulders and then he'll walk forward like 5 feet. And then I rub his butt. And it's just, it's a nice interactive way. And because you are using your hands and not a tool, you can actually feel where you need to apply more pressure, where you need to take pressure away, where they maybe have a sore muscle, maybe they have an extra itchy spot, and that tells you you need to look for something like a tick. Anyway, it's truly, truly nice to be able to use them in the wash rack to give my horse a bath during shedding season, take them to the sand, let them roll, let them dry, and then curry them again with the gloves.
Very good thinking. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's funny is when I first learned about the grooming gloves, Sam and Jay, who own the company, they're down in Texas and they were telling me of the gloves and I'd never seen them. They hadn't come to market yet. And I was like, all right, guys, super suspicious, right? I'm like, it sounds really too good to be true. And I was super skeptical. And everybody is very skeptical about these gloves. And I don't know why, because they really are too good to be true, but they're not too good because they are true. Does that? And I feel like my high school English teacher would yell at me because there's no way I could diagram that sentence.
They are the unicorn of grooming tools.
They're the unicorns. Oh my God. They're the unicorn of grooming tools.
They really do exist and they're magical.
Yes. And they have that wonderful free shipping code, PEG.
There we go.
Yeah. So that is... that's one of the ways that I really take care of the shedding problem is I let my horse do the work, like roll. And I will tempt him to roll any way I can. Come back from a ride, he's sweaty, put him in the sand. Rinse him, put him in the sand. Just because.
Yeah, I haven't found a horse yet that will not stop, drop, and roll after he's had a bath.
He doesn't exist. That's unicorn, maybe.
That's another unicorn.
Or Pegasus, whichever. Wings or horn, whichever you like.
So you're using the top secret guaranteed to get your horse to shed faster method from Leave. What about when you get to the final aspects of the whole shedding process each spring? There's always that last little chunk section. It's like, well, my horse looks mostly good, but he's still got splotches of hair.
Now what? So I've got solutions for that too. So, well, one of the things that I like to do through the whole shedding process, and this is more about the chapstick saver that we talked about earlier. Shapley's makes a product called Number One Grooming Oil. And this stuff, I love this stuff more than probably any other grooming product I've ever used. And I realized that it's a very nice conditioner if you're clipping your course. You can use it before you clip to let the clippers glide through. You can use it after you clip to get rid of that like dull flat color that they have because you've chopped up all their hair. And it kind of brings the shine up after a clip. But when you are grooming your horse, I put some Number One light oil on my washcloth and I will kind of wipe my horse with it. And then I'll start to use the gloves to curry comb him, because the oil makes the hairs stick together and fall to the earth and not in my nose.
Ah.
Yes.
You're weighing them down.
Yes. So the other thing the grooming oil does is that it makes your horse super shiny, like beautifully shiny. And it is a conditioner, not a sheen product. So you're at, you know, remember VO5, the hot air treatment, the hot.
Oh yeah. Yeah. VO5 hot oil treatment. Yes.
It's like that, but modern and for horses and better. So that's my tip for keeping it out of your lipstick. Now, splotchy horses, super common, especially if your horse lives outside. And, you know, even in the winter, horses can get a little sun bleached. So as the new summer coat comes in, it might be a little darker than the winter coat. And you have this like weird kind of funky looking splotchy coat going on. Mm-hmm. There are shampoos that you can use that are color correcting. Shapley's makes 4 different colors. They make a golden, a red, a black, and a whitening. And you can kind of fill in the blanks as your horse continues the shedding process with these Equitone shampoos.
Interesting. Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're actually fun to play with your own hair. The whitening one, especially because it has that purple tint to it, it can be really good for blondes.
There we go. Great stuff.
Let me just flip through my notes here. What else about shedding horses? There's an element of denial in there somewhere. And you can also clip the shedding horse. A lot of people ask me that. Well, won't it mess up the summer coat? Well, the horse's coat is continually growing and shedding out. So as shedding season starts to come, like right now, if you want to clip your horse, you totally can. You're probably not going to get much of the summer coat in with that clip. And it eventually will grow in anyway. If you have a show horse that stays clipped throughout the year, you know the benefits of clipping the shedding horse. It can make life a lot easier in terms of how comfortable your horse is. I don't recommend clipping your horse for an aesthetic reason unless you have a show horse. I recommend clipping your horse because it's a comfort issue if he's not shedding fast enough and the weather is getting too warm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes spring gets there before their summer coat does. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's an issue of, you know, they'll start to shed when the days get longer and there's more sunshine and light. But sometimes, I mean, you're down in Florida. It's like, I feel like Florida is forever spring and summer. But up here where we are, you know, we have a bunch of light right now, but it's still in the 20s at night. So I'm not going to clip. Right. But if I lived in Florida, if I was your neighbor in Florida, I'd be clipping everybody.
Yeah. So some of the horses do. A horse that gets a heavy coat in the wintertime. And I have both of the horses we own were born here. They've lived their entire lives within 20 miles of where they're at right now. One gets a very, very, very fine, light, hardly any winter coat at all.
Right.
The other one looks like a woolly bear caterpillar.
Yay, genetics.
Obviously, the woolly bear caterpillar, he gets clipped early in the fall, and then he gets clipped again in the spring, because when winter is here proper, what grows back in between is quite sufficient.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But in the fall, come September, October, he is just miserable because the temperatures are in the 80s, even at night, and he's got a medium winter coat already. So he's kind of a miserable camper if we don't give him a hairdo. And then in early spring, we do that again, because again, it's grown back.
It is.
And if we let him shed out on his own, it's going to, again, be in the 80s before he loses all the hair.
Oh, absolutely. and it's something that I'm actually kind of curious, like, what's the temperature right now for you? Here we are at the end of March. What are the days like for you?
Days are generally in the mid to upper 70s.
Okay. My second question then is, do you have a spare room? Because I will be there tomorrow.
Yeah. We have a spare room. There you go.
Sweet.
It's been in the 70s and 80s for weeks. Yeah.
Wow.
Now we have little cold spots like today. Yeah. The high is only like 71.
I know. But you know, I think generally speaking, if you can help your horse shed out with as much grooming and an appropriate clip, if that would benefit your horse, depending on where you live, I think you're going to have no problem with shedding season. Try the oil to kind of keep the hair from like floating everywhere and letting your horse get a little conditioner at the same time.
Yeah. Tell me the name of that oil again.
It is the number one light oil from Shapley's.
There we go. Number one light oil from Shapley's. And how does one apply it?
I kind of just pour a little into a washcloth and buff it on my horse. Because
round and round in circles like a curry comb would be?
Pretty much. Because okay. Anytime I feel like I can buff his muscles, I think he appreciates it. Like there he leans into me and things like that. So I'm going to do that.
There we go.
Yep.
So number one. Perfect.
You could also put it on like a dedicated brush if you want to brush it on instead. People use it for deep conditioning their horse's tail if it's gotten a little dry, which happens a lot over the winter with, mud and weather and things like that.
Yeah.
I think we just have one segment left.
All that's left is
Equiscience.
Equiscience. Okay, this is it.
This is the one where
for real.
Yeah, this is the one where I just had like my mind like poof blown. So, and this I'm going to give credit to the Brits for this. They did a study over the course of I think a year or so, looking at how many horses in Great Britain that develop laminitis, and what they found is that one in every 10 horses or ponies may develop one laminitis episode per year, one in 10 laminitis per year.
Wow.
That's crazy. So, but what they found was that it was, again, like we talked about with Dr. Rossini, it was kind of the low grade laminitis where hardly any of them developed those typical rocking back signs or the divergent rings on their hooves where you see the heel starts to grow faster. So the ring starts to be funky across the toe of the horse. So they're talking about episodes of laminitis that aren't super obvious, which is the ones that we really need to be on the lookout for. A lot of them were missed because the owners weren't finding the digital pulses, which I have a YouTube video on how to do that. It can be easy. The tricky part about learning how to take your horse's digital pulse is that a healthy horse with no hoof problems typically doesn't have a digital pulse that you can feel. That's a good sign. So it's hard to learn how to find the digital pulse if it's not always there. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, that makes sense.
So what they found in the UK was that many of these horses that had laminitis, the digital pulse was completely missed. And overall results, the conclusion from the study is that laminitis is a lot more common than anybody had ever suspected and just as common as colic. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
So really, it's going really by unnoticed unless it's really bad.
Yeah. Or, the owners are like, I think he's got an abscess or, he has a bruise or there's lots of things that look like laminitis. Like bruises.
Yeah.
Or, they've been stung on the ground or after a jump school or something like that. So really kind of an eye-opening study about laminitis. And I was starting to think about this and, I have this image in my head that England and the UK are just green all the time. I don't know, because I have this romantic notion of what it looks like.
Yeah, exactly. It always looks like all things great and small. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a green everywhere, rolling hills, lots of clouds and thunderstorms because, and I'm reading this study and I'm kind of, my mind starts to spin about like, okay, so horse owners, what do we need to look out for? We need to look out for the footing so we can avoid road founder. And we need to look out for repetitive injuries. We need to look out for metabolic disorders. We need to look out for anytime your horse has a fever or a disease episode or a colic. Those things all can lead down the road to laminitis. And when you talk about actively taking control of your horse's health and being a positive force to keep him healthy, one of the best things we can do is weight tape our horses. It's an easy thing to do. You just need a weight tape, which I think they're like $8 or something like that. And maybe you need an extra set of hands. And like once every couple of weeks or so, you just strap this tape on. It's a simple mathematical calculation. I have a link on the website of how to do the math to do it. And then you just kind of get a baseline of where your horse's weight is. And then you can see over the months if he's going up or he's down. And now that we're headed into spring, where everything is starting to turn into giant horse salad everywhere as far as the eye can see, you have that increased risk of laminitis anyway because the grass is so lush and it's so rich. So being able to take an active part in your horse's health and work towards keeping his weight under control is a really smart thing to do. And I use a muzzle on my horse year round. We have really lush pastures here year round. They do really well over the winter. And a lot of them are top seeded. So he lives in a muzzle because I know him. He is a Hoover vacuum cleaner and he will eat all of the salad as fast as he possibly can. But I need him to be in a muzzle because he does have those tendencies to be, portly. Is that the right word to use? can you call a horse portly?
I think you can. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. He's one step beyond like a hay belly. It's like his hay belly will like engulf his whole body, right?
It just spreads.
It's a spreading hay belly. But now that I have everything under control, I'm all about using the Green Guard grazing muzzles. Now, do you guys know what those green strawberry trays are like at the supermarket? Green? You know what I'm talking about?
Strawberry
tray. Like when you buy a pint of strawberries, they're in that
oh
like
yes, yes,
green tray.
Yes, the like little square thing. Yeah.
Yes, with the sides are ventilated and the bottoms got vents in it, but yep, not so wolf. Big that the strawberries fall out. So the Green Guard grazing muzzle always reminds me of a strawberry package for horses because it is a firmer kind of material. It's actually made out of a food grade resin. So it's a lot stronger than your typical grazing muzzle. And it's vented on all the sides, all four sides, huge, huge ventilation area. And the bottom, instead of having a singular hole, has these like rectangles. And so your horse, when he's wearing the muzzle, has to move his lips around the middle to get the little bits of grass that come through the little rectangles. Let me know if I lose you anywhere on this. Are you still back on the strawberries?
Well, I know that's actually a really good visual because I'm just imagining a giant sized strawberry, the little pint that you get your strawberries in, the giant sized strawberry thing. Then they're usually made of this funky cardboardy stuff that's big enough to go on a horse's face. I can totally imagine that.
Yeah. So, and because it's so ventilated and because it's made of this resin, your horse can breathe freely. He's not going to get claustrophobic. And the material is firm enough where it stays away from his nose, his chin, and the sides. So he's not going to get rubs.
So it maintains its square shape?
Yes. And it doesn't collapse back on him. And it's been shown to reduce the amount of food intake as, you know, in a similar manner that the traditional circular hole ones do. And it just... To me, it's just a much better design. It also comes with, you have the option of getting a special anti-Houdini halter to go with it.
Well, yeah, there's that.
There is that. Because the muzzle's only as good enough if your horse will wear it. And this halter, it's like a traditional halter. It's got a really, really nice padded crown piece, but also from the crown piece, just in between the ears, it's got an extra piece that comes down to connect to the top of your amazing Green Guard muzzle in the front. So he can't hook the basket on anything and pop it off.
There we go. So yeah. The whole, because yeah, some of them are clever that way. Some of them are clever. So
clever
whenever
or not,
whenever you have a horse that is okay, getting a little portly, might need a muzzle. How do you introduce the muzzle to the horse? How do you do it?
I'm really lucky in that my horse is extremely agreeable. He's like, oh, this is how we do it now. Okay, whatever. However, there are lots of disagreeable horses in the world. And like with everything, I have to go back to the fact that if we can train a horse to get into a small metal box on wheels and drive it down the road, if we can train a horse to run really, really fast over giant obstacles on a cross-country horse and do all sorts of amazing things, we can train a horse to wear a grazing muzzle. And you have to do it in steps, right? If your horse is all of a sudden, you're like, I have to put a grazing muzzle on him, but he's been used to having 8 hours of turnout, I would recommend putting the muzzle on him, hand grazing him, just so you'd be like, oh, this is how we roll. And then you can start to shorten the amount of time he's out from 8 hours down to four or whatever. And you put the muzzle on him for an hour. And then the next day he wears it for 2 hours. And the next day he wears it for three. And then all of a sudden it's part of his life. Because it has to be. It has to.
It's just there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, seriously, we strap pieces of leather to them with these iron stirrups, climb on their backs, and then run and jump things. Like, that's crazy when you really think about it, isn't it? And we can train a horse to do that. They can deal with a grazing muzzle, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully. Now, you do have the really clever ones out there that are like, I get it. I don't like it. I'm doing something about it. But with the quote-unquote anti-Houdini types of halters, you can really start to alleviate some of that stress about, you know, knowing that your horse needs to be in a muzzle because he's at risk versus not trusting him because he's a Houdini.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, horses, again, hashtag horses are weird. I really want to start that, by the way. I guess I should start being on Twitter.
You do. You need to get on Twitter with that. Yep.
So, yeah, there you have it. The halters and the prevalence of laminitis and weekend warrioring and all sorts of amazing ways to let your horse be super sandy just so you can groom him with gloves more often.
There you go.
Yeah. And stock your freezer with ice and grooming oil. And I think I just summed up the entire episode.
There you go. All in one. Yeah. So for folks who just can't get enough from Pro Equine Grooms, where do they find you?
Well, the best place to find me, honestly, is on Pinterest, because Pinterest is such a way to, you know, save all of these kind of reference articles. So you can find me on Pinterest. I can put a link in the show notes. I have a new Facebook group. And this is where you guys will really understand how truly creative I am. I call it the Pro Equines Grooms Group, right?
There we go. Pro Equine Grooms Group. Don't make it more complicated than it needs to be.
Right? I was like, we're just going to keep it simple. Just, it's the Pro Equine Grooms Group. Now, tricky to say fast, but that's a place you can find me on Facebook. Also, I've gotten so many amazing emails from people that have found me from the first two episodes. Like, it's been a joy to open my email every morning and be like, who emailed me today? Because I am here to help. And I am here if you need me for anything, you can always email me, liv@proequinegrooms.com. Totally available.
There we go.
Yep. And again, we're going to put all of our amazing deals up on the show notes, but absolutely a huge thank you to Shapley's. They've been one of my supporters for really since I started. We got to know each other over our love of grooms and the support of grooms, and they have grooms awards and grooms classes all over the U.S. Ice Horse, who saved my horse from laminitis and makes wonderful athletic and cooling products for horses and also humans. Hello, which is nice because my knee doesn't always want to cooperate. The guys at Hands-On Grooming Gloves, like seriously, with the sorcery of these things, they truly are the unicorn. And Green Guard grazing muzzles. Your first, a grazing muzzle, second, a way to hold fruit. And I appreciate all of them. And all of the links and offers will be in the show notes for you guys.
There we go. That's at horsesinthemorning.com. And don't forget, download the Horse Radio Network app to listen to your shows. It gets all of the Horse Radio Network shows on it. You can download it today for your Android or your iPhone. Just search Horse Radio Network. It's free and easy to use. And for the less tech-savvy folks in your life, help them download it too, because they'll enjoy the shows. So we will see you again next month. Leave.
Yes. Thank you. It's always a pleasure. Send me all the emails, guys.
Yeah. Hashtag horses are weird.
Hashtag horses are weird.